It's my honor tonight to introduce the speaker tonight, who is Sue S. I've known Sue for about 11 years, and I'm actually her sponsor, but she's got 7 years sobriety over me. So how does that work? How it works is you become really close friends, and you get to know each other very well, and you raise each other up. And Sue is the best friend a person can have. I can say that honestly. And she's worked in recovery most of her career. She's hilariously funny. She's got a temper like a 2-year-old. But she lives Alcoholics Anonymous, and the people that she's helped throughout her sobriety is phenomenal. And I've never heard her story. She didn't do her fifth step with me, so this is the first time that I will have heard her story, and I can't wait. I introduce Sue Sweet. Hey, I'm Sue. I'm an alcoholic. And my sobriety date is February 19th, 1997, and that I am grateful for. And Wayne Thomas gave me my white chip. I remember that. Yeah, I thought he was the bouncer from Whispers. If you've lived around Woodstock, you would remember Whispers. And that was my hangout. And honest to God, he looked like the bouncer from there. And I thought, what is he following me around for in AA? God! Because I used to sit there, sometimes I'd drink coffee to act like I really didn't have a drinking problem, because I just did not want to ever admit that I had a drinking problem. So I would drink coffee, but then I'd get people to put a little Kahlua or something else in it. So anyway. I'm real nervous, but I'm going to try real hard not to cuss. That's really hard for me. But I don't have a temper of a 2-year-old. I've graduated 3. I really have a very Irish temper, and we were just talking about it. And since I've gotten older, I've lost my filter, and I cannot find it. And I just don't know. I mean, I really just don't know. People don't believe it when I would tell them that I never knew how to say no. I always said yes, and I never backtalked the boss. Ever. Now it's completely opposite, so I really have to watch my P's and Q's. I know now that I was born an alcoholic. There is no doubt in my mind, just because I remember back when I was younger and, oh, the things I did. And it was so crazy stuff. And my parents drank very, you know, back in the day, a drink a night, whatever, you know, but I always thought everybody in my family drank too much until I got sober and I saw really how they drank, and they drank normal. It's just me. I was always the black sheep of the family, and I still pretty much am. But sometimes that really bothers me, but most times I've really kind of come to the conclusion that I'm the black sheep of the family, and I'm okay with that. I guess when I was about, I had a great family, a great, great family upbringing. We were very family oriented. We were Irish Catholic in a little town in Iowa, and my dad taught, and my mom stayed home and had babies. And when I was about 10, we had a house fire, and my brother Mike, who was 12, I was 10, and Matt was 8, Mark and Pat. But the two of my brothers died in that house fire, and my third brother Mark almost died. He got burnt pretty bad. And it was just a very tragic thing that happened in our town. And it's a very small town, and I remember being in the ER at the hospital, and like all the town was in the ER to support my family. And that's kind of how I grew up, with that supportive, good Iowa people. You know, it's just the way I grew up. But anyway, at that time, something happened to me, and I don't know what happened to me. I can't pinpoint it, but my mom said to me, the teachers got really worried about you because you changed so much with that house fire. And, you know, I've read these books about how tragedy can cause this and that. And, you know, I mean, whatever. I don't like self-help books. And my counselor at one point tried to get me to read this book. And I'm an alcoholic. I mean, I don't know what the cause is. I don't know if that created it. I don't know. But, you know, it's okay with me today that I'm an alcoholic, because I found recovery. And now I know what was wrong with me all my my life, and I know what to do with it, you know? And, yeah, I get a little snippy, and I don't work the program 100%, but I do the very best I can. So moving on, I didn't really drink in high school. I didn't even smoke weed. I was a jock, believe it or not. No one believes me, but I was. And I played girls basketball, and that was my love. I was obsessed with it. And so like at 16, I think I drank once, and I stole a bottle of cold duck from my parents, and I drank the whole thing. I didn't, you know, I drank the whole bottle. And then I immediately threw up, and it came out my nose, and I got scared. That was it for me. So I was really the DD driver, and my girlfriends would get Mountain Dew, dump half of it out, and get slow gin. And I would drive them around, and they would drink, and I would smoke cigarettes, because I wasn't supposed to do that either. And I asked my friends, I said, you know, I have this memory problem. I said, but when we were growing up, did I drink a lot in high school? Because they did. And they were like, no, you were never, because I didn't drink. I turned 18, and back then, way back in the day, you could drink at 18. So I started drinking at 18. Basketball was over. I turned 18 in April, and I was getting ready to graduate high school, and it was on. It was on. I started drinking, and then I started really smoking because I could not stand the taste of anything alcoholic. I just didn't like any. I never drank beer. But if I smoked a lot of cigarettes, I didn't taste the alcohol. And I'm telling you, I remember I thought I was all of that. I swear. I would drink, this one girl and I would like have contests, see who could drink the most, screwdrivers, that was it. And I would literally go in the bathroom, throw up, come back out and ready to go again. I mean, I just drank like a crazy woman. And this went on, you know, pretty much up until I was about 20, 21. And in my 20s, I was a binge drinker. I would drink, I met my ex-husband, and we got married, we moved to Chicago, and I binge drank then. I just maybe would drink once, maybe every couple of months. Well, this is more after I had kids. When I was in my early 20s, before the kids, I drank every weekend. And I never did not get drunk. I didn't think there was any reason to drink unless you're going to get drunk. I mean, I don't know of any. I still don't get that one drink concept crap. I think, what? Who would drink one drink? I don't get that. But so then in my, you know, when I was 25, I had my first child. And I really did start just binge drinking. And I would maybe drink once every 6 months, but I'm telling you, when I got drinking, I couldn't stop, and I got drunk, and I was a maniac. I think I was fun some, but I really did crazy, crazy, crazy things, and I'm lucky to be alive. And I found out later, when I was thinking about Alcoholics Anonymous and if I was an alcoholic or not, I thought you had to drink every day. I thought you had to have no job. I thought you had to live under a bridge. And that was none of that was me. And so I knew I wasn't an alcoholic. And I had no clue to what alcoholism was. I'm a nurse, and I remember taking care of alcoholics at Northside Hospital while you're out going into DTs and want to dive off your bed on your head because you thought you were on a boat. And I was like, oh, my. That's what I knew about alcoholism. And in nursing school, they did not teach you about alcoholics. And what I learned was nothing, really. I could take care of DTs and, like, if your liver was failing. But and even to this day, I find it just humorous how these doctors and nurses don't know anything about the ism of alcoholism. And I work in I'm not working in treatment right now, but when I worked in treatment, there really wasn't that many people that were alcoholic. There were some good psych nurses, but they just didn't get the alcoholic. And some people here can attest to this. They would be bitching and wanting to get out of the van. And they thought I was the mean nurse because I would give them the serenity prayer to read instead of the drugs. Because I thought, gosh, they have to learn how to cope. They have to learn how to cope. And if I just drugging you up, how are you going to cope? Especially when their vital signs are normal. I'm not playing that game. And so I'm still a firm believer that because, you know, you're in a safe place. You got to learn how to cope. I had to learn how to cope. And, you know, I had to work in an adolescent unit for a little while to learn that I had no coping skills. And I'm like, what? I didn't have any coping skills. These little children, I had to teach them how to have coping skills, and I didn't even know what they were. And this is not too long ago, maybe about 10, 12 years ago. I was like, geez, Alcoholics Anonymous is really, seriously, has helped me to grow up and to grow up to a halfway decent person, I believe. I really try to do what I'm taught and what I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous. I lost my train of thought. Let me think. When I was drinking, like I said, I did some really crazy things, and I did get I did get a DUI, and I was taken to Cherokee County Jail, and lo and behold, I worked there in charge of medical about 10 years later, but I had a different name, so I guess I don't know, but I just always find that kind of hilarious. But I should have had 1,000 DUIs because, you know, I'm telling you, I just, for some reason, I'm invincible and nothing's going to touch me. And I would go to Burger King and get like a big iced tea, and I would dump most of it out and then have the rest vodka. And so I would drive around with my children, shame on me, and I'm not kidding about that, drinking this concoction and thinking all is well, you know. And I'd had a van, and so I thought, who is going to pick up me in a van, a mommy in a van, you know. So I really thought I was getting by with a lot, and I did get by with a lot. Yeah, and this is how crazy I am. I had made a decision in my head that if I ever got pulled over, I'm running. Now, this is, I was a lot lighter, and I could run, but I was going to run. Now, this is, I don't think they had tasers at that time, so I don't know. But that's how I thought. That's exactly how I thought. And, you know, the other thing that was really sad for me was I got to the point where I couldn't leave Woodstock. I couldn't go anywhere else to drink, but Dos Hombres, and I'd walk across the street to Whispers, only when I got drunk enough, because I couldn't go into Whispers sober. That was not a thing I could do, because it was a scary place. It really was, if you're sober. But anyway, I fit right in. I do know, you know, the insanity of being an alcoholic, you know, and it's so weird to me how the denial, I was in such denial. I remember when I was getting divorced from my kid's father, I went to this counselor, and she said, what do you do for fun? And everything I did for fun had alcohol. It was had alcohol in it. I never did anything unless I could drink. And I remember taking my kids to the circus, and I was so pissed off that there was no alcohol. You know, and I was like, what? You know, and I didn't want to be there. We have to hurry up and go now because, you know, mommy needs to get home and have a mommy drink. And but that's how I didn't know that you could have fun without alcohol, because I sure couldn't. I didn't know how to. And, you know, the counselor said to me, now this is, I was like, I got sober at 38. I was probably like 29 or 30. And she said, do you think you might have a problem? No. Are you kidding me? But that was because I didn't drink every day at that time either. And I didn't know, you know, and I found out that what happens when you drink, bad things happen to you when you're drinking, you probably have a problem. If that's your common denominator, you might have a problem. You know, if you get in a DUI, you might have a problem. You know, I remember, though, I was really good about getting cabs after that DUI. And I don't know if anybody remembers Vicky and Mark, but they used to come here. Vicky moved and Mark passed away. But they were my cab drivers. And I remember that Vicky. God, she'd always say, you know, Sue, you don't really have to drink like this. And I'd say, just take me home or pull over. I was famous for pulling over side of the road to puke. I was so when I walked into one of my first AA meetings, there was Vicki and Mark, and they were like, thank God you're here, and I'm like, and I remember I immediately spilled a cup of coffee, and I said, I'm not drinking, I really don't, because I thought, God, I don't want these people to think that I'm walking in here, and I'm, you know, not, I'm drinking. But anyway, it was just a crazy craziness. I remember there used to be a bar down 92, and it was a seafood place, and I used to hang out there too. And you know, they had a board, and on that whiteboard, they, like, their patrons, like people that come all the time, they would put like their birthdays down on the board, and I thought, I made it. I'm on the board. I mean, and I have all these friends, and I walk in, and everybody's like, "Hey, Sue's here," you know. And I was so accepted in that bar, and I drank. Ooh, I drank bad. But one time, and I remember I was young and I was thinner, and I was sitting there at the bar. It was my birthday, and I was waiting for people to come in. And this guy came in, and he had a knife, and he was going to rob the place. And the lady, the owner of the bar, said, "Call the police!" Well, he ran out the door, and I ran after him. And I'm telling you, I did not think, and I'm running, and I'm going behind the bar. It's over by that pool house, pool place now. But there used to be, on the backside, was the sheriff's department. So I'm chasing this guy with a knife through the parking lot, and this cop car backs up and runs into me. And I go flying. Jesus criminally. Then they wanted to make a big ordeal about it, and I'm like, whoa, now, I'm not driving. Yes, I'm drunk, but I'm chasing that burglar girl. And it's my birthday, and you can't do anything. I'm going back to the bar. And they were like, "No, you're not, ma'am." And I said, "I even got a cab ride up here. Okay, fellas, I'm going back." So I had to wait for the highway patrol to come, and I was obnoxious. And I had to sign a waiver that I wouldn't sue. And, I really wasn't hurt that bad. My hip hurt kind of for a while, but it was like, I just... that always happened to me. But I was always drinking, you know? Well, then what happened was a tornado came through Woodstock. And I am from Iowa, but I'm terrified of tornadoes. And my neighbor, my good old neighbor, Ange, she said to me, "Let's smoke a joint. It'll calm you down." And I'm like, "I don't smoke joints." And she said, "Come on, come on, come on." Well, the first time I smoked with her, mind you, I'm in my 30s, I didn't like it. The second time, oh, my God. So what happened for me was I smoked 24/7. I could not stop. Now, I didn't realize that I drank. I didn't drink every day for up until about 2 years before I got sober. But I had my nights that I drank. I drank Friday nights to oblivion because my kids went to their dad's because I worked the weekends. And then I picked up Tuesday night and Friday night. And then I went Tuesday night, Thursday night, Friday night. So, I mean, it just, you know, my disease progressed. But the marijuana I could not put down. I could not put it down. I didn't even get out of bed without smoking a joint. Now, these people that smoke little bowls, are you kidding me? I would have a big, fat Cheech and Chonger waiting on me. It was bad. I was bad. I even went to see my brother in... where is he? He's in Paris. And I took a train, and I went to Amsterdam. Oh, yeah. That was fun. That was a lot of fun. And I just recently found a picture of me with a cop with a joint. And I thought, oh, mother of God, I got to throw this away. My grandkids will see it. But, that's how I lived. That's how I lived. Now, I was responsible. I really was in between these little bouts because I coached a basketball team. I was on the PTA, everything on my outside world looked good. My yard was mowed. My kids were doing great. And I did all these things. But on the inside, it was bad. It was bad. I heard this lady one time say she was like a tree. Everything looked good on the outside, but inside you're eaten with termites. And that's how I felt. And that's why I know that I had to drink heavily at night to go to sleep, because when I laid in bed and I thought about where my life was, I didn't want to live, I didn't want to die, I didn't want to be, and I could not stand that feeling. And to this day, 20 years later, I have never forgotten that feeling. And most times when I talk about this, I cry still, because that is how bad I felt. It was horrible, horrible, horrible. I still really didn't know that much about Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, my ex-husband has like 12 brothers and sisters, and most of them are in AA. So many years ago, I went as a visitor to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, and I really liked that feeling I felt inside. It was in Des Moines, and I remember staring at everybody going, "Do they look like alcoholics?" You know, and I kept saying to myself, I always ask people, "Do you think I'm an alcoholic?" And everybody said no. And so I like, okay, that's good. Well, what happened was one night I was going out for just a drink, and just that drink, and I went to Dos Hombres, and then I don't know what happened. Some things happened there that I'm not going to even bring up because there's not. But anyway, I went to the other bar, and I drank, and I was in a blackout. I got a ride home. I'm blacked out. I don't know what I said to my neighbor, but I called her up and told her off at 2 in the morning. And then I called that hotline, oh, Jesus Lord, the hotline for Cobb County that, yeah, you know, that you want to kill yourself. But I didn't want to kill myself. I just was so upset. And they were talking to me. And they said, well, are you drunk? And I said, well, yeah, I'm stoned too. And so they said, well, maybe you need to go to an AA meeting. And I'm like, oh, I don't know about that. And I dumped my marijuana down the toilet. And I said, well, I'll think about it. But honest to God, I don't really remember a lot of that conversation. And so I went to bed, and I called out sick the next day. And then they called me back. And I thought, oh, God, they're coming with a straitjacket. If I don't go to that AA meeting, they will be after me. I knew that. So I said, okay, I'm going to the 1 o'clock because I was so hungover. Well, I called up here in the morning, and I talked to Ellen. I don't know if y'all remember Ellen. She moved, too. But she would talk to me about coming to a meeting. And I said, well, I don't want to go because, you know, I'm a nurse, and I want people to see me. And she said, well, I'm a chiropractor, and you just – people aren't like that when you come here. We're all the same. And, you know, she gave me this big, you know, spiel to come in. Oh, before I got to get back to this, before that happened. The week before that happened, I did home health, and I was training a nurse to part of Cherokee County. And her name was Vicky, and her husband was Big Jack that used to come here from upstate New York. And he said, blow ya a kiss. And he passed away several years ago, but that was his wife, and I was training her, and she kept talking to me about Alcoholics Anonymous, alcoholic. And I'm thinking, I have cleaned out all the joints. There's no joints in my car. I have sprayed it. And I didn't drink in my car for a long time. I mean, I had my car aired out. So why is this woman talking to me about Alcoholics Anonymous? And I knew everything because my sister-in-law was in AA, and I learned about from her. But it was just weird how she just kept talking to me. And then she finally said, well, my husband's in recovery, and I'm in Al-Anon. I went, oh, okay. Well, it was like God put her in my life to talk to me about Alcoholics Anonymous, because I'm telling you, 2 days later, I was in an AA meeting. And when I came in an AA meeting on that Saturday night, Jack was telling his story, and I saw Vicky, and I hid right behind where he stands, right there. I'm hiding behind Claude, like, oh my God, I know them, and he says, Sue, it's okay, they're here for the same reason you are. And it was, I saw ex-boyfriends in here, I saw people's kids I coached basketball on, and I'm like, oh, you know, but I had to remember, they're here for the same reason I am. But early on, I'm going to tell you straight up, I did not come to AA to quit drinking. I came to AA to quit smoking pot and to learn how to drink normal again, because I really did not believe I was an alcoholic. And so people would tell me just to keep coming back and listen and see if anything resonates with you. Well, my very first meeting, I swear, you know how Dorothy is? I'm finally home in Kansas. And I'm corny like that, okay? I'm really, seriously, I felt like something just kind of, and I was home. And I cried my whole first meeting. I was hysterically crying, and there was no Ellen. I thought Ellen was going to be sitting at the door waiting on me, like a little secretary talking in here. And but I remember they made me read the promises, too, and I'm like, I almost ran out the door because I thought, how dare you make me read the promises, and I'm crying, and oh, my God. But I just kept coming to meetings and listening and realizing I'm an alcoholic. God, I did not want to be an alcoholic. So finally, about 6 months, I still was back and forth in my head, maybe I'm really not. Well, wait a minute, you black out. Well, maybe I'm really not. And I've been back and forth in my head debating it. And a friend of mine said to me, Sue, normal people don't worry about if they're alcoholic or not. And I'm like, oh, I guess I am an alcoholic. And from that point on, there's been no doubt in my mind I'm an alcoholic. And, you know, really, seriously, my first year, I don't remember. And I would tell people, well, I'm not that bad. I'm just not that bad. You know, things were just not that bad because I really didn't lose anything. But you know what? I lost me. I became a person that I wasn't really. I was the kind of skank that you all men loved. Who are you and where's my car? I mean, it was like it was terrible. It was terrible how I acted. It was terrible what I did. I didn't like kill anybody or anything like that. But you know what? I was a skank. I was bad. And so... It's just like I just did not even know who I was anymore. And You know, like I said, I could not go to bed and think about my life because it was terrible. It was absolutely terrible. So when I got here, I just felt so at ease and so at home, and I loved it. But I don't remember much of my first year. I remember my sponsor told me, no dating the first year. And I think I would, too, as like a lot of people. I won't say what she really said, but she said the three M's, meetings, meditation, and I'm not saying the third word. But anyway, you can figure it out. But I also, yeah. And my sponsor was like real Catholic, like almost like a nun. And I'm like, oh, whoo. Anyway, I think I'm like a lot of people. I was addicted to relationships, too, because, you know, anything on the outside that made me feel good on the inside, I'm on it. I'm doing it. And I think that really had a lot to do with being boy crazy all my life. I mean, I was boy crazy. And I always had a relationship, always, always, always. And so after 1 year and maybe 2 months, I met him. Woo, him in here, right in these rooms. And he was a little younger than me, and I fell madly in love. We lived together a couple years, and we got married. And then he really wasn't a very nice alcoholic working a good program because he forgot he was married. I could be on Jerry Springer. He lived a double life, and here I am. And so all of a sudden, my whole AA program went out the window. I am telling you, I never really had to work at being sober because I enjoyed my life so much. I enjoyed how I felt. But when this happened to me, I was devastated because I trusted him, and I don't trust very easily. I'm very nosy, and I don't let much get by me. And I let a lot get by me. And I think it was I went into denial, you know. And honestly, I thought everybody that was in AA was here for the right reason, and everybody was honest and good. And I mean, oh my God, my whole world just blew up. And I didn't want, I wanted to drink. Many times I was going to drink, but I didn't drink. And I remember one time my friends got really worried about me, and Jen had called me, one of my friends, and she said, what are you doing? And I said, I'm in front of a liquor store, and there's not a effing thing you can do about it. And she said, well, you could come over here. And I said, okay. And I went. I don't know why, because I was terrified to drink. And then one of my buddies told me, if I can find it, he made me read this. And then he told me I had to write it on a piece of paper, and every time I had bad thoughts about my ex-husband, I had to read this, so I could get out of that resentment, because I became very resentful. I would drive down the road and say, that telephone pole looks mighty nice. It's got my name on it. I just don't know if I want to live anymore. I was hurting. But this was our course. We realized that people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. Though we did not like their symptoms and the way these disturbed us, they, like ourselves, were sick too. We asked God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we were cheerfully grant a sick friend, and on and on. And so I had to pray for him. And my first prayer was, God. And my second prayer was the same thing, and it was like that for about a week. And then all of a sudden, I didn't feel that anger anymore. But it took a while, and then I would revert back. But I'm telling you, I had to dig in, and I got a new sponsor that I could see all the time, and I really had to get into this book, really had to get into the program, and really had to work an Alcoholics Anonymous program. And it saved my life. Now, in the meantime, my kid's father, who never drank or drugged in our marriage, and I didn't really either, he ended up dying of an overdose of pain pills. Now, when he died, it was long before opiates were like they are now. And he doctor shopped, he had kidney stones, and he ended up 40 years old, dead on arrival, Kennestone Hospital. So there were weird things happening after this with Scott incident. And I remember one day that I left the Howe place, and I'm going to get drunk at noon. I'm not drinking before noon. And my daughter had begged me to get, she had gone back to Iowa where they flew Juris's body to Iowa to have him buried. And she wanted me to pick up these pictures. She had gone to Iowa and wanted me to pick up pictures of her dad's grave and all that stuff she had taken. So I thought, oh, that's perfect. I'll come get these pictures, and I'm going to run to the liquor store. And then I will probably won't be home when my kids get home because I don't want them to know I'm drinking. Because they were, my daughter was up my rear end about my drinking, and she was only 14 years old at the time. And so I went and picked up those pictures, and I was just flipping through them. And if you're from the Midwest, you know, he died in November. It's gray. The dirt is there. It's brown. It's cold. It's nasty. It's depressing. And I was looking at these pictures of his gravesite, and he didn't have a tombstone yet. And I'm like, oh, my God, that's what happened. Because I'd heard he got sober. It's like such a shock to me because he didn't do any of this in our marriage. And he turned nice. And I thought, ooh, why'd I divorce him? You know, I mean, I really didn't know. But then it was just so weird how we both got led into AA. But then, you know, I talked to him on Thursday and begged him to get help, and he was dead on Saturday. So looking through these pictures, I thought, I can't do this to my kids. So I always had God got in my way of my drinking. And, you know, it was really pretty heavy duty that, you know, maybe about 10, 11 years ago, I just had a rough time. It's probably longer than that. I'm bad with dates. So anyway, I got through that, and I have been on a journey now because my picker, I'm pretty sure, is still broken. I pick bad boys, and I pick creeps, and I just don't know. I don't know. So I think my picker still is broken, and, you know, I'm, like, been alone for a long time, but I'm okay with that because I finally am settled and okay with who I am. Now, up until then, I never stayed home. I was always gone, doing. And I know it was because I didn't want to have to slow down and look at me. Even in recovery, I didn't want to look at me. So now it's like, I got grandkids. And so now it's wonderful because I said to my daughter once, I said, Katie, if I got drunk again, what would you let me see these kids? And she said, well, it depends. And I said, nope, wrong answer. The answer is no, you'll never see your grandkids if you're drinking. I said, I need all the layers of help that I can possibly get. I mean, I don't really have a fear of drinking again because it's never, like, in my mind now. But that ism still there. You know, and I'm not gonna act like it wouldn't happen to me. Now, when I was early on, I had this ego, I guess like everybody, and I thought, I'll never get drunk again. I would be too embarrassed. You know, I mean, I had this ego. I was telling somebody, I shared this. I was 2 weeks sober, and I decided I was going to be a circuit speaker. And we're going to change AA. We're going to change AA a little bit. All these readings, we're changing them out. You know, but thank God I never said a word to anybody. But, I mean, I thought I just had it going on, you know. And I think probably, too, when there was never anything wrong with me. I'm good. And, you know, it's been a few years back. I started working in the field, okay, and I love it. I love working in the field, but I had to take a break because I'd been doing it for, like, God, probably 17, 18 years, and I had to take a break. I was ready to kill you alcoholics and addicts. I was like, you know, but I just, and then I wasn't taking care of me because I wasn't going to very many meetings, and because I didn't need a meeting because I'm doing it all day long at work, you know. But anyway, I would come to meetings and I would see people and I thought, oh, they can't know that I'm having a bad day. I have to be okay. Because once you get some time in you, you think you have to be okay. And I remember at a meeting, and I wasn't okay this one meeting, and this lady shared that. She came from Arizona to stay with Danny M. And she had like 25 years or something. And she always said because she had time, she felt like she had to be okay in every meeting too. And she said that got to her. And she drank because she wasn't okay, and she had to tell. It's your ego keeping you, I'm okay, you know? And when she shared that, it was on for me. So when I'm not okay, I'm calling my sponsor, I'm calling my friends, I might have to share it in a meeting. But, you know, I have to be honest with my home group. I had to get a home group so they know when I'm BSing them, you know, and I have to have a sponsor that I'm accountable to. And, you know, it doesn't matter how much time you have, because I know people with a lot of time that are crazy, 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 and they're not working a very good program, and I don't want nothing to do with them, you know, so it doesn't matter how much time. I get more out of the newcomer than I do somebody with a lot of time, because they keep it simple, you know, and I forget that simplicity of staying sober, because it really is easy. It really is easy when you embrace I embrace my alcoholism. It is not going away. It's going to be with me the rest of my life. It's getting worse. I know that. They say it gets worse. And after this incident with my ex-husband, and I saw how I really relapsed emotionally, and I knew that if I was that bad, like wanting to run into a pole, whoo, I knew. I mean, because that's not me. If you know me, but, you know, I mean, I contemplated this stuff. But so I just know that if I drank, it's going to be bad, because when I quit drinking, I was bad. Now, I didn't go to detox or anything like that, because I don't need detox. But I just started really drinking daily, maybe about 6 months before I got sober. And then in my head, I thought, well, I'm really not an alcoholic, because I'm drinking homemade Kahlua and coffee. And I don't know why I realized, I rationalized that if you're drinking coffee with Kahlua, how is that alcoholic? How do I figure that one out? I just didn't know. But, you know, I was down in the basement with bottles of wine, drinking it, and my daughter would come down. I was hiding from a 14-year-old. And my son was 10, and he'd say, Katie, leave Mom alone. She's not an alcoholic. She don't drink too much. And I'm thinking, oh, and falling down the stairs. I mean, it's like, oh, and it was my slipper's fault, not me. You know, I mean, I thought, you know, my poor kids, you know. And I when I came in here, I said they didn't really see, because they really didn't see me drinking that much till the very end. But it's not how what happens. It's not about drinking, I found out. It's your how you are as a person. I wasn't consistent. I thought I was such a good mom. And I would say, I got to go pick up some bread. I'll be back. Well, I really had to go out, drive through Cherokee County and smoke a joint and then go back. And my daughter would always be there, where's the bread? So I learned to pick up a loaf of bread before I lit the joint. And I had a deep freezer full of bread. That was embarrassing. So one day my daughter did look in there and said, well, you guys need to start eating the bread. You know what I mean? I was a hot mess, I'm telling you. But that's where alcohol took me. Until I came into these rooms and I learned about what was wrong with me and embraced this disease. Because, like I said, if I'm fighting to stay sober, shit. You're missing out on all the miracles around us, you know? So I just say, you know what? I am what I am. And if I take a drink, this is where it goes. I don't think about getting, huh, because I didn't get a, huh. I got sober because I got scared. I couldn't get stoned. I couldn't get drunk. Now what am I going to do? And I was terrified of drugs. Now, I did a few little white crosses once in a while. I did a whole lot of white crosses one day. And I did a little crank once in a while. But, I wasn't a drug addict, but I smoked a whole lot of weed. But, see, I know that I would have gone into drugs. And back when I got sober, it was cocaine and crack cocaine. And my friend said to me one day, she said, Stu, if you ever do cocaine, you're going to lose everything. And that stayed with me. So this is how sick I was. I dated this guy, and he was the biggest cocaine dealer in Woodstock, and I had no clue. And I would go to these bars, and people were snorting lines in the bars. I never saw it. I always guess I was just too drunk. I was so naive to this. I remember going to Florida with this girl, and this girl came up to me and said, ask if I had any drugs to sell. And she said she needed some cocaine. So I lectured her on how harmful cocaine was. And I followed her around the bar saying, now, ma'am, I need to talk to you again. She was an undercover cop. She finally said, would you leave me the hell alone? Oh, my God. That's the kind of stuff I did. When I drank, I was cray-cray. But I can get crazy being sober, and that's really kind of nice, you know. I kind of can get out there. But, you know, I'm okay with getting out there today, you know. It just is what it is, right? So now I work at Cobb County Detention Center, so I hope I don't see anybody there, because you know what happens when you come in and see me. I don't play. I don't play anymore. I am not mean. I'm not one of them mean nurses. I work in intake, and I usually say, I'm so glad to see you didn't die, because, you know, it's kind of a revolving door, unfortunately. Or I'll say, your mom's very happy you're in jail, because now she knows where you are, and not in the alley, not in the ditch. And, you know, it breaks my heart. I can't tell you how upset I am to see what's happening to our younger generation. You know, it breaks my heart. I can't take it. I really can't take it. And, you know, honest to God, I've been struggling a lot with what do I want to be when I grow up? My granddaughter's 5, and she said, Gigi, what you want to be when you grow up? And I said, well, Lauren, I don't know. I'm kind of struggling with that right now. And she goes, well, you'd be a good nurse. And I said, I am a nurse. And she says, I know, but you'd be a real good nurse. I said, you're right, you're right. But I've been a nurse for 39 years. I got a 2-year degree right out of high school and 30 freaking 9 years. And I'm so sick of it. But what happened was, I'm burnt out. I'm so burnt out, I'm sorry. But what happened was, the last few months, all of a sudden, God has put people in my life. God has put inmates in my life that I sit and cry with in intake. And then they go out, and the deputies say, what the hell are you doing to these people, making them cry? And I'm not making them cry. I just get really gut-wrenching honest, you know, because that's all I know. I am, if you know me, I do not BS. I do not lie. I'm probably too honest. But I'm not mean. I'm just like, I'm going to just tell you the way it is. And so I kind of think I found what my... I need to, you know what I need to do now. I know what I need to do now, what kind of, where I need to go back to work at. And, you know, it's been a 2.5-year break, and I got to go back. I got to go back and work with, you know, I love alcoholics and addicts. I really do. And people look at me when I say that, but it's the truth. Non-alcoholics, non-addicts. They'll go, God, dang. And I don't, like, they don't, at work, they don't know I'm in recovery. I wouldn't tell them, most of them anyway, because... I, you know, most places I don't care, but you know the judgmental ones, you know what I'm saying? And I just, whatever. But they all know, especially when you have an ex-sponsee coming down the infirmary going, I need to see my sponsor, Sue! And I'm like, I've been your sponsor in 10 years now, and did you forget about anonymity? So, I mean, people are asking, what's a sponsor? And I'm like, oh, God, you know. So, you know... I just, you know, I kind of, if somebody came up and asked me for help, I have no problem with people knowing. You know, I've had, like, my neighbor moved across the street. He's a gym. Hey, I'm Ricky, and I'm an ex-felon. And I'm like, you don't even know where I work. That doesn't bother me. I think he was trying to, like, and he and I have had, I don't even know him, really. And he's told me about his drug problem. He just got out of this drug court and that. And he came over to me the other day and said, I started using again. And he said, I just did it for a couple of days, and I'm clean. I said, well, why don't you go to some meetings with me? Nah, I don't need meetings. So I always kind of throw it at him. You want to mow my yard, Ricky? You're going to come to a meeting with me. You want my money? Meeting, you know. But he's a good kid. But I don't care who knows I'm in recovery now, really. I was told I'm supposed to never say no, and I was asked to do this, and I thought, oh, I'm not supposed to say no. And I'm supposed to help the suffering alcoholic, because if I don't help another suffering alcoholic, then I am going to get drunk. And, you know, I believe everything in this book now. I don't care. I used to think it was just kind of, this part's for me and that part's for me, but not the whole thing is for me. And I know for a fact it's all for me. It's all for me. You know, and, you know, I do have a little time, and I see people that have time and they don't go to meetings anymore. And I'm not trying to be judgy, because I don't go to as many meetings as I used to go to. But I thought, you know what? For me, this was freely given to me by people, you know, in these rooms. And if I don't go to meetings and freely give it back freely to others, that's bad. That's bad, because the newcomer needs people. And just because my life is good because of Alcoholics Anonymous. My brain is still the same. You know, I mean, I'm a little bit not near as whacked out, but, you know, but still, you know, that's what I was taught. And so I really try to keep it simple. I really try to work with others as much as I can. And, you know, I have a home group, and I have a sponsor. I've always had a home group, but I've always had a sponsor, and I will always work with others. Now, unless you really... No, I'm just kidding. But there's sometimes I do have to say no, because I get overloaded, and I still have to take care of me, because, you know, I'm one of those that kind of sometimes forget to take care of me, you know, and if I get crazy, then I'm no good to anybody. But anyway, that is my story, and I'm so happy. When I heard this from this lady once, that she was so glad she was an alcoholic, I thought, Jesus, Lord. But I get it now. I get it because I know what was wrong with me. And, you know, today my granddaughter and his grandson spent the night with me last night. Oh, my God. And Lauren was in a bad mood. And I said, Lala, you go get in Gigi's bed, pull the covers over your head, and then you hop out of bed and you're starting your day over, okay? And you're going to hop out of that bed and you're going to be happy and not grumpy. And she went in the bedroom and did it. And she goes, Gigi, I'm happy. I'm like, but, you know, it's so cool because obviously my daughter one time said, God, you're so smart, Mom. And I'm like, it's all Alcoholics Anonymous, Katie. I'm telling you, it's not me. It's what I learn in these rooms and what I hear. So anyway, that's it. Thank you. Woo!